This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I actually am coming in tomorrow for a little bit. Have a little demo to do on a new business process management system that we have purchased. And while other people have seen the demos and seen the capabilities, and we've talked through the stuff, and we've negotiated and all that kind of stuff, Many of the programmers have not actually seen the package, and so I'm going to be going over that with them tomorrow. And just kind of giving them an idea. My brakes are a little squeaky right now. I'm not sure what's going on, but if you hear that, that's what that is. Maybe we'll get that figured out and fixed when things settle down a little.
It's been busy.
My first week back, it's been busy. Anyways, so gonna run in tomorrow for that for a little bit, but then gonna do some grocery shopping and then get back because I am in the thick of book 6 now. I've made it past chapter 1 already. Chapters are usually about 12 to 13 pages. That means if there's 320, 330 words on a page, you get about 1,000 words every 3 pages or so. So if they're 12 to 12 pages, 14 pages sometime in there, you're looking at 3,000, 4,000-ish words or so, 4,500 or so words in a chapter. So I'm, clipping along. I'm into chapter 2 now. By the time I get through this week, theoretically, I should be done with chapter 2 and maybe moving on to chapter 3. I was concerned maybe that wasn't going to happen. But at this point, it just might. I thought I was going to be tied up this weekend helping with a database migration, but as it turns out, they are not doing that this weekend. So I will have my weekend free on Saturday and a good deal of Friday, possibly. And my beloved and the young lady who's staying with us are both going to be gone to the choir retreat, so it's just me, which means I am going to write like crazy until I just completely blow all the glucose out of my brain and I can't get it replenished. So it'll be fine, and then I'll probably have some time on Sunday to write as well. So I was a little concerned that I was not going to make it, but because I've had a few little kind of move-arounds this week. But if I can get a good writing evening in this evening and then really lay in and plow into it over the weekend, basically get 2,500 words a day on Friday and Saturday, I should be able to get that 10,000 words done, which would make me very happy. It would make me very happy. And I've banked about 4,000 words, 4,400 words, because I did them last Saturday, which is all the introductory stuff. So that was all ready to go, and that banks me a little few words that I can call on. So basically, we're in the hunt now, and if everything works out like it's supposed to work out, in the next 14 weeks, should be putting down a couple of chapters a week. That should put us out to about 28, 29 chapters, 30 chapters, somewhere in there, and then we'll have number 6 done. So, anyways, have no idea what some of the stuff is going to be in number 6 at this point. This is just an exercise in fluidity. We're just going with the flow, and we're we're walking our way through the fog, and we're just waiting to see what happens. But it's fun. It's fun, it's fun, it's fun, and I enjoy it. And I've heard back from a couple of my beta readers this week, and they seem to be enjoying it so far, so yay! So that all is going fine. Because I'm not really sure my beta readers would tell me, I hated it! You know, I mean, this is book five, so if they have any investment in the books at all, they're probably gonna be okay. But so far, we have been chortling a bit over things that are in the book. I think that's about it. I had mentioned last week that I was going to try to wrap this up this week, talking about men and women. I think I'm going to temporarily wrap it up no matter what this week, because there are many things in life that fascinate me. And if I recall correctly, I have already bookmarked many of those things that I have not chatted about yet in this podcast. And so I'd like to go back and pick up a couple of those things and sort of vary the topics a little bit. Instead of just plowing through. I had mentioned last week that a couple of friends had sent me some very interesting reading material. Or podcast material, I should say. Listen to those podcasts. In fact, both of them, I felt like, deserved their own podcasts. So, excuse me. I will be doing that eventually. And then in addition to that, on Netflix, I watched a young woman, in my opinion young, she's over 30, a young woman whose name is Elisa Schlesinger, obviously very intelligent, a lot of fun to listen to, a lot of foul language, but that's okay, and I would like to do a podcast on her comedy routine as well at some point, and possibly combine that together with another comedy routine that I had watched because you can learn a lot from humor. Because people don't laugh at jokes unless they find something to connect to. Sometimes that something is a feeling of stupidity at whatever is being described in the joke, and a feeling of superiority. But the kind of jokes that Eliza was telling Ms. Schlesinger, I don't know, was telling were not necessarily that type of humor, although she did use that sometimes. But it was more the camaraderie type humor, the sense of resonance type humor, the identification type humor, where people were laughing because that had happened to them as well. And I think it's very telling when you look at some of the things that she is saying that it does bring a reaction because people recognize that in themselves. So, because of that, I'd like to, like, go over some of those things. And I realize she said some of those things in jest, but frankly, there were a couple of those things that she ran over in jest, which I think, in fact, there was a better truth in all of that. So, I'd like to just react to a few of those things. And as always, people can take it for whatever they want. If they think that makes sense, that's fine. If they don't think that makes sense, that's fine. I have, for many, many, many years, been all about the here's what I think, what do you think type of approach, and that everyone gets a right to their own opinions. So, that's that. So this week, I thought I would just sort of layer up all the things I think I understand at this point. And on the basis of that, then come to some conclusions about what I feel like a man's role in a marriage should be. I'm not necessarily going to attempt to tell women what they should do in marriages, because that is up to them. But in terms of what I'm trying to accomplish in my marriage and what my advice would be for men in a marriage, I think I can handle that side of it. And again, this is one of those things that if you want to listen to this, fine. If you don't want to listen to this, that's fine too. So when we are talking about men and women, and specifically this whole process whereby we eventually wed and eventually go on to have children and eventually go on to raise those children, to me, that has become, over the last year and a half, 2 years, a really, really fascinating dynamic. And as I have mentioned in previous podcasts along these lines, I think I have a better handle on what's going on, how to react to it, how to live within the glories and challenges of a marriage at this point than I have ever had before. We'll get to what that means later, because I think it's really fascinating, because men have a tendency to shortcut any discussion about marriage and evaluate the entire discussion on the basis of one metric. Okay, if I go through all this stuff, am I going to get to have more sex with my wife? That's really the end-all, be-all metric for men. And if you actually end up believing what I'm going to talk about in the next 10 minutes or so, this is going to be a sad podcast for you. So anyways, I think what's really important is that we recognize the strata of influences that we have when it comes to marriage, when it comes to male-female relationships, and try to get some separation between them. And then as we are moving through life, to attempt to figure out where our given reactions, feelings, words, actions, where are all those coming from and where do they fit in this strata. So obviously, at the very foundation of the existence of men and women is this amazing attraction that has been built into the species, specifically for the survival of the species. It's been many, many months ago now, but when Robin Thicke did a song called Blurred Lines with Usher, I think. And in typical music video form, the first dancers in the music video were buck naked, and then there was an uproar, and so then basically they just put panties on them and had them ride around and bounce around on the screen. One of the young ladies who was happy to do that, since she was getting paid, she said later, you know, men just need to get over women's bodies. And in recent weeks, I've thought, I wonder what that would look like. I suspect that if men just, quote, got over women's bodies, and at the same time, they sort of lost any real interest in spreading their seed, as it were, the human race would come to a grinding halt very quickly, and it would go extinct. Not to mention, little girls who are getting paid to take off their clothes and bounce around would soon be out of jobs. So when she said it, I smiled and thought, you know, you owe your job to the fact that men have not gotten over women's bodies. But that's neither here nor there, and that's time for a different discussion. So, there is this amazing, wondrous attraction that is built in. There is this dichotomy that has been designed into the system, whereby it's easy but not complete to us recognizing that there are men and women, male and female. Now then, there are some general average behaviors that are exhibited by these archetypes that we call male and female, but at the end of the day, it's either XX and XY for the vast majority of people. Obviously, there are exceptions to that, but it's pretty binary. All right. So that's one foundational piece. It is natural. It is built right into the system. It is useful for the propagation of the species. It has made men and women get together for thousands and thousands of years. Who knows how much longer? Who knows how much farther back that goes? Who knows? But it definitely exists. It is definitely foundational. And it's definitely a driver. Now then, on top of that, though, then you also have other oddities. You have individual perceptions. So the nature of any given relationship between a man and a woman is based foundationally on this thing that happens between men and women, the way of a man with a maid, Proverbs says. But then on top of that, in that relationship, you also have the perceptions of that individual man and that individual woman. You have their unique sensibilities, their decisions about how they will proceed in life. And then on top of that, you have other things that have become much more pronounced in the last 100 years or 150 or 200 years with the development of media and broadcast content and mass marketing. Because now you have the ability to impress many, 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 many people with ideas of what it is to be male and female. And in fact, before, what was acceptable type behavior was limited to what we knew around us, the few hundreds of people we might know around us in a small town, or the thousands of people we might know around us in a city. But especially with the advance of social media, we now are bombarded constantly with all sorts of things as to what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. And especially we are bombarded with images that are designed to do nothing more than attract our eyes. They are images that are designed to make us feel inadequate because they are trying to sell stuff. So there is this onslaught that is coming from marketers who are studying us, who are trying to figure out what is the quickest way to get a visceral reaction out of us. And for the most part, in men, that visceral reaction comes from lust. And for the most part in women, that visceral reaction comes from fear. And these marketers are quite happy to exploit all of those things if you will just watch their little advertisement a few seconds longer, because they do know at this point that they are dealing with seconds. So they're going to get as much bang for the buck as they possibly can. This last week, as I was on vacation, my wife, normally when she watches TV, she uses her TiVo at home, and that has this wondrous green button on it that as soon as you start a commercial break, if it is recorded under certain circumstances, you can just press that button and it goes poof, right over the top of all the commercials. She only has to press the button once. It already knows how big the commercial block is. That's a wondrous thing, because my wife does not like watching commercials. However, when we were on vacation, we had a ton more things available to us because we had cable. And so we were relaxing, we were watching some TV, but we no longer had the zip button. So we actually had to start watching some commercials. And in the process of doing that, I thinks to myself, why don't I just pay attention and see what facts about a given product this advertiser is trying to impress on me, as opposed to all of the other feelings and vulnerabilities that he's trying to exploit with the atmosphere that he has packed or she has packed around this advertising. And it's amazing when you start doing that. You start watching these commercials and you say, of all the things I'm seeing at this moment, how much of this is simply a recitation of facts concerning this product? And the answer that you will find, that is no surprise, is not many facts. I'm getting my mail, one moment. Most of it is all things that you might aspire to. All things that you might hope for. All things, for the most part, that this precious little product, whatever it is, has absolutely no chance of supplying you. And yet the advertisers trot out all of these things when they want to show you their products. You could just watch any ad and you can see this, but one in the particular I was remembering was some sort of food or something that you were going to serve at some party or something. And as they were talking about it, in the background, a wife looks over at her husband lovingly, like he is the most fascinating man in the world. And, you know, us as guys, I'm backing into my garage. Us as guys, we look at that and we think, wow, that guy on there who has that kind of cheese, his wife thinks he's the most fascinating man in the world. And when you actually say it, of course, it's stupid. But when that image just goes flashing by in your brain, when you're not paying attention and you have situations where you're walking by that block of cheese and you think, oh, that looks like good cheese. Or you might be thinking, oh, without realizing, oh, if I buy that cheese, my wife will look at me adoringly. So what's fascinating to me is in all of this churn of images that we're receiving, in fact, there's a broad category of these images that we are receiving that, while they are not entirely bogus, they're about 99% bogus. And it has to deal with being the most fascinating man in the world. One of the things that I have chatted with a few of my friends about that I just find just a fascinating thing is a couple of years ago, there was a song that was the big summer song called Funk You Up. Bruno Mars sang it. Okay, so it's a cute little song, very catchy. It had some bad lyrics in it about the way he was, you know, he was actually speaking about women. But, you know, it was very, very cute. And one of my favorite YouTube videos is where somebody cut together like 66 different classic dance movies from the early 19th century, 20th century, you know, from the 40s and the 50s, earlier, from the 40s and the 50s, and Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly and Debbie Reynolds and all those. And they're just fabulous dancers. You know, there was a time when our entertainers that appeared on movies did more than just act. There was a time when they could sing, when they could dance. They were very impressive. So anyways, so Funk You Up. So lyrics. This hit that ice cold Michelle Pfeiffer, that white gold. This is one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces, stylin', wilin', living it up in the city. Got chucks on with Saint Laurent. Got to kiss myself for so pretty. You know, I'm too hot, hot damn. Call the fire police and the fireman. I'm too hot, hot damn. Make a dragon want to retire, man. I'm too hot, hot damn. Say my name, you know who I am. I'm too hot, hot damn. Am bad about that money, break it down. Girls hit you, hallelujah, because Uptown Funk gonna give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. If you don't believe me, just watch. Okay, so in other words, this guy is, you know, admiring all these women and he's bragging about how good he is with women. Now, here's the disconnect that's fascinating to me. You get Bruno Mars on a talk show and he's just kind of cool and laid back for the most part as he is when he's singing his songs. And you know what? You throw beautiful women at Bruno Mars. I don't know if he's married yet, but if he wasn't married, you throw brutal, beautiful women at Bruno Mars. And yeah, that's pretty much he's gonna take advantage of whatever beautiful women, you know, might make themselves available to him because he's a guy. So this last year or the year before last, there's another song that came along. And that song's called Bang Bang. And Jessie J was in that. And, oh, Ariana Grande was in that. And Nicki Minaj was in that. Okay, and so here's some of the lyrics from that song. She got a body like an hourglass, but I can give it to you all the time. She got a booty like a Cadillac, but I can send you into overdrive. See, anybody could be bad for you. You need a good girl to blow your mind. Second verse, bang, bang, or chorus, bang, bang into the room. I know you want it. Bang, bang all over you. I'll let you have it. Wait a minute. Let me take you there. Wait a minute. Let me take you. Bang, bang. There goes your heart. I know you want it. Bang, bang. Seat of my car. I'll let you have it. Wait a minute, let me take you there, wait a minute, you know, okay, so then Ariana Grande sings her little verse, you know, she might have told you, she might have let you hold her hand in school, but I'm going to show you how to graduate, no, I don't need to hear you talk the talk, just come on, show me what your mama gave, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so it goes on and on and on and on, same, and of course, the whole philosophy here is the same type of philosophy that it was so-and-so and the who was that? Nicole, somebody in the Pussycats. You know, don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like me? It's all this, wow, I'm really good at sex and I really want to have sex and I'm going to wiggle around so that you can see how good I am at sex and blah, 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 blah. Except when you bring these real live women on talk shows, not the persona that they try to project, but the real live women, and you bring them on talk shows, and they're all intimidated, or they're trying to put up a girl good front, but when they actually talk to them, oh no, you know, I get scared really easy, and I get scared. Okay, so I see the problem with this as being the fact that these women are actually performing against a stereotype that has been created by men. So the stereotype that they're pushing themselves against and creating as an act is not really what they want in life. And they really don't necessarily want to fulfill that for just any guy who would come along, even though they're telling all the men out there that, yeah, that's what they want. And they can do that. And I think what that causes is a certain psychic dissonance. Now, I think you can find that easily in the young starlets like Britney Spears who are shaving off their heads or, having to rehab themselves or having to this, having to that. I think you can find that easily. And I do think some of this happens in men too. There is psychic dissonance in men too. But I think the big difference is that I think men kind of know what it's doing to them when they lie. I think they're more intentional. I think they're more honest about the fact that they may be hiding things from their spouse. Whereas with women, I think it's easier just to kind of slide into playing a role and believing that that's actually them. And I think what that ends up looking like is that the first stage of marriage is ignorance. And I've said this before. The first stage of this marriage is ignorance. Because both sides are working to give an impression that is not necessarily true to who they are. There's terrible stories that are told many, many times about he just seemed so charming when we were dating. He just seemed so charming. And then as soon as we got married or as soon as we got serious, then he started wanting to control my actions and control my destinations and wanted to know all the time where I was going, who I was talking to. He wanted to control my friends. He wanted to isolate me. Okay, that stuff happens all the time. I do think that men who are getting ready to do that usually are pretty well aware of what they're going to do and what they are doing. But there is a flip side to all that. And I've talked with enough buddies now that I can just tell you it is not an uncommon story for guys to look at me and say, I don't know what happened to the woman that I thought I was marrying. Which gave rise to my little saying, men get married thinking their wives are going to stay the same on general and average. Women get married thinking their husbands are going to change. Because what can happen is that a woman can very easily slide into an adoption of all these images that she's been fed as to how do you attract a man? How do you keep a man? How do you do that? Until a certain point comes in a marriage where a woman decides, you know what, he should just love me for me now because he's made a commitment to me and I shouldn't have to put up, all that acting and stuff. I can just be me now. Except it's extremely confusing for guys. I can tell you that this happens now. So then what? Then what? The first stage of marriage is ignorance. The second stage of marriage is revelation because you really, really, really don't know who the other person is you're married to until you actually get married and until you spend some length of time with them. So, what comes next? Well, as I've said before, the third stage of marriage is decision. You decide. Some people will be aghast to hear me say this. But the question is, does that mean that we always decide that we are going to stay? And I'm not sure that it does. I got a friend who's going through a really rough time right now. And I've been close enough on the edges of that that, you know what, in good conscience, I know that he has been pursuing, that he's been trying to keep his marriage together. He's trying and trying and trying and trying and trying. And it just isn't going to happen. And if you look at it from the outside with a clear eye, you realize maybe it would be better if it didn't happen. And I am not uncomfortable suggesting that to him because he's already come to that conclusion. But I've had these conversations with him, you know, when I would start saying, yeah, a lot of guys, they're just really confused, you know. They start looking around going, what happened to that wonderful, playful, loving woman that I thought I was married? And he just started nodding, yep, yep. Now, maybe he contributed to some of that. Maybe he did. But, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on with a lot of guys that I have a tendency to think it's, quote unquote, not all men's fault. So where does this leave us? Where does it leave us with this buffeting that can be so confusing to separate from what is the primal foundation, from what is our interpretation of our existence and our facts, from what is the societal push to try to get us into a state of discontentment? What is our refuge? What is our tact in life, then, to build the best possible marriages that we can? And as I said, I really feel like I'm only qualified to speak from the husband side of it. But, you know, from a general side of it, I have a little bit of speaking to say, and that is that we should live lives in the spirit and not in the flesh. Now, that's very hard for some people to figure out what is what. I understand that. But if you're really quiet and honest with that, I think you can figure that out. What is life in the spirit and what is life in the flesh? And if you can't, I wrote a book called Still Whispers that should give you a leg up. You can just go find it on Amazon. Once you understand the difference between life in the spirit and life in the flesh, and as a general rule, decide you're going to live life in the spirit, then what is the next step? Well, for husbands, the next step is Ephesians 5. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. That means that we as husbands conduct ourselves in a sacrificial manner for our wives. That's what that means. And so, you know, my approach at this point has been to live a life, and I've told my wife this, and I've told other people this, and it's no big secret, but my approach in life is to live a life that causes my wife as little amount of turmoil as possible and brings her joy as much as possible. I think I mentioned last week that her best friend from college, you know, joked a couple of times about the fact that it was our wedding anniversary and she was there for the entire weekend, that first weekend. And I just flat out looked at her and I said, you know, Ray, this is something I knew Lynette would enjoy. And this is her vacation. It's our wedding anniversary. It's a celebration of being together. I knew she would enjoy seeing you again. I always enjoy chatting with you. So why wouldn't we invite you up? Because when you take the me, I want, I'm not getting me, and you take all that out of it, and you instead turn your face towards your spouse and say, what would be the thing that would drop the level of turmoil in her life? What would be the thing that would give her some rest and some enjoyment because she's heading into a crazy fall season here with so much to do? That would. And it did. And we had a great vacation. Because husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. So that means if you stack the dishes in the dishwasher and your wife is saying, you didn't put those dishes in there, the dish where they need to be turned the other way, and they all need to be facing each other, or they're not going to get it, then you just put the dishes in the dishwasher the way your wife wants to put them in. Okay? In 50,000 years, it's not going to make any difference. But in 50,000 years, if you are kind and loving to your wife and understanding and pursuing in terms of doing what you can to make her life calm and joyful and wonderful, even if it sacrifices things that you want, that is going to make a difference in 50,000 years. Because you're going to be able to look on back on that and say, you know what? I did okay. I did okay. I made good decisions. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.